to winning at life. This is the weekly wrap. Yeah, I know we've added that twist on, but that's because we do the daily wrap also, weeknights at 7. We're live here for the next 3 hours. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, the 401k and Retirement Authority.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Coming up on today's show, we're going to review the Women Winning It Live presents Gregory Ricks live event from this week. We got a big stack of comment cards here. Did you bring your comment cards, your copy of the
card? I have them.
Yeah, so we're going to be answering a bunch of the cards that were asked of us by ladies with their women-specific issues, although some of the questions could work for all of us. We're going to wrap up the week in financial news, and it looks like 70 may be the new target retirement age. And look, longevity, slower economy, lower yields. Basically, we call this math. It's just kind of pushing some people's retirement date back. It's probably going to push mine back as well. If you have a financial situation you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. You can send us a text message via the Gregory Ricks & Associates app, or you can email us, gregory@gregoryricks.com. Right out the gate, though, evaluating an annuity. You know, we talk about sometimes if you're looking for a little bit of yield, but you're scared of the downside and you have no tolerance or maybe very little risk tolerance, annuities are the way to go. But not as often do we talk about, once you've decided to go with an annuity, how do you pick the correct one? What are the differences in them? And, you know, we've definitely put a nice little line of demarcation between variable and fixed. But once you decide to go fixed, still a lot of decisions to be made there.
Well, if you're deciding to go fixed, you can't put all the assets in there. I had a conversation with a couple this week, and they're very conservative, and I told them, basically, we can get about half the assets at no risk. And the other half, they're okay with managed money. They just don't want a much potential negative movement. So it'd probably be directed more towards our treasury and short duration bond ETF strategies in that case. But when you're deciding to go forward on that, the fixed side has to correlate with your other assets. It's not just, oh, I've got a few hundred thousand I need to do something with, and not look at your other assets. And this gentleman has a pension, is also going to have a lump sum option, has a 401k, and he's already working with us on assets. So and he's probably retiring, say, next 60 days. So we're going to have multiple meetings. But he was really comfortable knowing that he could take money out of risk that has been in his 401k, and they don't really have no risk options except for stable value or money market. And this isn't unusual, because when somebody comes in and they, you know, we narrow it down to a 1, 2, 3, or 4, and there's more detail on the 1, 2s, 3s, and 4s as far as risk, but they're pretty conservative if they circle a 3. Which means they have a little bit of tolerance, but not much. So you have to blend both of those worlds, the Wall Street world and the insured money world, to create that. And that doesn't mean they can go in aggressive, and they're not necessarily fully growth oriented. So you're going to take a conservative tact or direction on the managed assets. And of course, the no risk can't go down, because it's an interest-linked investment, is basically what I refer to as a fixed indexed annuity. So you're getting upside depending on how you're linking it, but you're not in the market, so you can't get market risk. So then you've got to look at, okay, what should I be looking at if I'm picking up a fixed annuity? One of the things I'll refer to, what's the big negative on surrender? I mean, on annuities.
The surrender period.
Yeah, I gave that away. But you knew the answer. That's why I asked you.
Right.
Because we talk about what is the big negative?
We've talked about that before, yeah.
Yeah.
That came up.
I've seen surrender periods go as long as 17 years. And that's just way too long. What are we doing 17 years from now? No, let's make, what are we doing 14 years from now?
What are we doing next Thursday?
Doing a show at 7.
True.
Yeah. But it's also like, well, what is the market going to be doing next Thursday? How much am I going to be spending that day next Thursday? So that gives you an idea. And we're trying to. So what we want to have an understanding of is, where are our assets going to be? But I don't want a commitment of that long of a period. Even if I'm going to buy a bond, I don't want that long of a duration. Because remember, we talked about 30-year treasury bonds, and if interest rates move up 1%, you've dropped 21% in value. So I don't want a fixed annuity that goes that long. So I kind of look at surrender period as like a duration. What would I like to be in? 10 years or less. And then I want access to the money. I would like to be able to distribute out of it or take the penalty free and move the assets out. And then I want the option of walk away at some point. Now, if I love it, it's doing the job it's supposed to be doing. I'd like it to continue. That's where if you're comparing it to a bond at the end of 10 years, that bond matures. They've cashed you out. You could have loved that bond and said, man, let me stay in. Give me 10 more years of this. So when you go forward on an annuity beyond the surrender period, anything that we would use would not restart that period there. So then you've got to look at how are we growing it? What are we linking to as far as the indexes? What's my access to money? How does that return or the expectation of return correlate to my other assets? Are we needing it to act pension-like, meaning have an income rider attached that's going to be for a fee, and how much is it going to grow? Is it going to compound? And where's the sweet spot of turning that financial tool on in regard to my other assets? And is it going to get me to where I need to be income-wise and create that guaranteed lifetime income?
All right, so I'm still stuck on the risk tolerance, the 1, 2, 3, or 4. Find out what I am real quick. Wouldn't this just take a second? Because I need to know this before I ask the follow-up questions. How do you find out if I'm a 1, 2, 3, or 4?
Well, it basically breaks down to what you think your upside is, but most important, like a 1, is you can tolerate a negative 12% swing.
All right, I'm not a 1.
Okay, a 2, you could tolerate a negative 6% swing.
I think I'm more of a 3.
So
I'm more of a 3 then.
Okay, that's a minus 3. So if you have $100,000 overall and it dropped $3,000, you're not losing sleep.
No, I can stomach that.
Over it.
I can stomach that.
And that's where a 3 would have the blend. So let's say you were a 3, you'd probably have $50,000 in managed money and $50,000 in fixed where there's no risk. So if you're using balanced income, we know there's not much movement.
You say balanced income. I don't know what that is.
I
know what that is.
But I'll explain. That's just what I refer to as a mix of treasuries and short duration bond. And they're all in ETFs. So we can get away from them quickly. But the 10 to 12 that we use really correlate. If you could see a chart, it doesn't move much where the market in comparison is moving all over the place. Pays a good dividend. We're not needing it to do a lot or do crazy things.
And what proportion of my money's in balanced income?
I would say if you were a 3, I'm just using an example, and everybody, it's not cookie cutter, but just using an example of $50,000 in treasuries and short duration bond ETFs. The other $50,000, say, is in a fixed tool that correlates to, say, Mosaic Index or that and the S&P, where what's the outlook? Probably based on current environment. And remember, it's interest-linked investing, so you're only risking potential interest that would be credited to the account. So what are you looking? You're looking to leverage 1% and get 2, 3, or 4, and say maybe look to average possibly 4 over a 10-year period. Now, also want to add in fixed annuities like higher interest rates. What do bonds like about higher interest rates?
New bonds.
Nothing.
The new bonds do, but your old bonds?
No, we're talking about existing tools. So
dead
you have
water,
a fixed
right?
annuity, and we know interest rates are going up. Fixed annuities, it actually like increases your leverage to link. It's like that hinge on a door. You've been in my office a lot. So you know those big doors are like, what, 7, 8 feet tall?
They're oak doors.
Yeah, and they're solid. You've never picked one up, but I did one day. And I had to put it down real quick. It was about to tackle me. But you see those hinges on there? They don't look that big, but it swings that door. So think of it as interest rate. And when you have a higher interest rates move up, all of a sudden you've got a larger hinge, which means you can leverage a larger door. So it gives us more upside in that way.
Because the principle is set in stone.
Yeah. And if you're doing an income rider instead, you're going to have a fee that could be anywhere from 60 basis points to, say, maybe 1.1%. But you're going to know that up front, but it doesn't affect the value of the income rider, just the account value. But if getting back to that 50-50 mix, so let's say because the Fed raising interest rates caught us a little bit and that account's down 3%, that's $1,500. So, and on your fixed side, how much would it be down?
None.
So actually, overall, how much are you off? 1.5%. So that's where you create that balance. And you know the thing on the treasuries and short duration bond, that's a short-term drop. And that's what you're looking at as. And when we created that balance, you had less movement than expected. I'd be surprised you get a 3% move on that. But if you did, take that worst case, possibly, then you're actually looking overall off 1.5%.
And if you go to a Wall Street broker, he can only do that ETF stuff. If you go to an annuity-only guy, they can only do the fixed side.
Yeah.
You do
and
both.
The problem is you need to be able to correlate both.
If you have a question, any of this go over your head, we'll try and catch you up in the next segment. I got some more questions for him, but you can jump in too. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks and James Parker. If you have a financial situation, a question about your money, your retirement, your savings, your emergency saving, could be that fixed annuity, it could be that gold bar, that wooden nickel.
Wooden nickel.
You know, I had an individual in yesterday we were talking about their inherited a bunch of coins, gold coins, silver dollars, all kind of stuff. And he's wanting to know, how do I divest myself? Because he's not really a big fan of holding it, but he might keep one of those solid gold coins. I said, that's, you know, hey, I'd like to have one. I just had never wanted to shell out 13 and 70 cents. $1,313 was the close yesterday. But then I'd have to put it some safe place and not forget where my safe place is. You ever put someplace safe and then can't find it?
Yeah, you hide it from yourself.
Yeah, I do that
on purpose.
Well, I don't do that on purpose, but I end up doing that. Then eventually, oh, there's where I put it. So if you're looking for help on mutual funds, your 401k, that was real popular the other night, that topic. I think every call was about that. We had Social Security calls last night. Whatever you're wanting to find, what twist or the problem. We had somebody call about REITs, non-tradable. What'd we tell him? Run for the hills.
With your hair on fire.
Yeah. The phone number is 504-260-0995 or email gregory@gregoryricks.com. Download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, and you can actually text us through the app.
Can I keep going through the process here? Then
let's do that.
Okay, so I come to Gregory Ricks and I've got $100,000. Let's just say I inherited some money or sold a piece of property. Who knows? But I want to invest this. I don't need it. I've got an emergency fund. All my bills are covered. I'm solid when it comes to my debt, secured and otherwise. So now we've decided we're going to split it up. Half of it's going to do a job where it remains liquid. The other half's going to go into safety while also chasing yield. But we have to give up a surrender period for it.
Yes.
All that sound like a nice sort of novice overview so far?
And we'd go, let's take a little bit of step back. We would have a discussion about your 401k, any other accounts you have, and let's assume you don't have much, but you obviously have 401k. Then we'd talk about this money. And first off, you mentioned it's inherited money. So first off, I'm thinking we probably are being conservative with this because it has a connection typically to somebody you know well, usually a family member. So we're kind of thinking we want to make sure we do the right thing with this money and respect their life's work is how I look at it. So I'm going to tend to start right there unless they're wanting to shift elsewhere. But still, we've targeted that money all the time when we do asset inventories. It's always listed as inherited, whether it's an IRA or if it's an after-tax account. We note that that's inherited money going forward. And even if it's qualified because you're taking RMDs from an IRA because it's inherited. It's a non-spouse IRA, so you're taking RMDs, so that may shift to a non-qualified account. We're still going to note where that's shifting to, and that's still inherited money that came out of the IRA, just had to go into an after-tax account. So when we're creating that blend, we're being careful with it. Now, you're under 40.
Barely.
Barely. Okay. Let's treat him as a teenager.
Sure,
please. Going on 40.
That'd be great. Yeah. 39 and a half.
Going on 40. I always gave them trouble of that. I said, well, actually, you're close. The past age, I said, actually, you're closer to that. Oh, no, we're going on 18, you know, is the way they look. So it's fun to kid them that way. So I'm going to do that to you as well. So if we're using the fixed annuity side, whether it's a fixed interest or fixed index, we want to be 10 years or less on surrender period. If we're using fixed interest, we're probably the sweet spot on yield is probably around 5 years there for that. We're obviously not using income riders because those really...
This isn't obvious to me. Why aren't we using income riders?
I'm about to explain that because most of them allow you to do that once you're age 50. Some are at age 55. There is a couple of them that will let you start doing that. Now, I'm just thinking of it being more like bond money, but with no interest rate risk, no credit risk, no default risk. And it likes the upside of interest rates, which is something we do have coming our way. And let's say it is a 9 or 10 year surrender period. It's a cash account going forward after that, that has no risk. And then you have a little bit of exposure on the managed money side. So when you kind of look at time saying, I'm not needing this for a while, I'm going to use it for the future, probably be a part of my retirement plan. So it gives you, it helps you make up what you've lost by not saving enough in the past. But it also, half of it's fully liquid, the half of it, you know, when it's going to be, and you still have access to it. And you could turn it into consistent checks and cycle your way out of that. Couple of our choices could even allow you to opt out of it and get your principal out any time beyond the start date. And so that really makes it a good, cool tool. Okay, it's got a 10-year surrender period, but I can opt out anytime I want. That's a pretty good option.
Do I need to know anything about the different companies? Because, you know, I hear the guys call in, I've got an Allianz, I've got one from some other guy. What are some of the companies and what's the difference between them?
You'll have a little bit difference in ratings. Anything we're, as a firm, we're going to talk about are going to be high quality companies. It's a product offering is really what differs in there. And, you know, I've got a dozen type that I really like, and that might come from, say, 10 different companies. Now, if I'm pressed to where we have a high net worth person come in and they're really focused on no risk, we can probably double that number. Little struggle getting above 20 that I really like because it's got to have 10 years or less surrender period. I have to like the exits. I have to like the linking to the indexes on how it grows. Biggest part of it is I have to like the exits, and it has to be under 10 years or less. So that's kind of like we can put 300 annuity contracts on the table. I've swept... How many did I say I'm putting on the table?
300.
300. Well, I just swept off 280 of them right there. Okay. So it really narrows it down. We're not just using anything. And some of those others could be good, but you're also opting for a longer surrender period. Or we might not like how they're linking or how they can distribute out. All right. I also want the lump sum option of walking away. And a couple of them in that mix that are really good and we use often gives you the ability to opt out at any time.
Stop me if I'm overstepping my bounds, but if you have a super long surrender period, but the rest of it's really good, you like the link, you like the return, you like the opt-outs, and there's like a 15, 17, that seems like it could be appropriate if you're doing that with a Roth account because you're playing long ball there anyway. Is there any situation when you go longer than 10 years? I mean, what's that look like?
It's going to be, you're going to have more assets. You're going to have better emergency money.
More baskets,
you have,
right?
And we need more assets spread across there. And that means we've used our favorite ones. It might be the case where we are trying to get 20 in place. Somebody has a lot of money, wants no risk, then we will talk about that. So if I go beyond 10, we really have to have a benefit we're really liking. And that's to say, to go to 12, I'm not going to 14, 15, 16, or 17.
No matter what.
No matter what. I'm not doing that.
Okay.
And the exception would maybe go to 12. Are we getting some upside? And there's a couple of them that you could consider that on. If the client's asking me, because there's times where I've given the client choice. This is a 9-year or 12-year, but there's a perk on that 12 years. You're getting 120% of the upside, let's say, versus 100% of the upside. I'll let them make that choice. If they ask me to make it, I'm choosing the 9.
What are some of the companies that offer annuities? Because they're always in the title of the annuity, just so it's not a foreign concept next time we hear it.
Athene is a major player.
Okay.
Security Benefit. Allianz is as well. You have American Equity, National Western, and probably now North American is a very quality company. Midland National is a sister company to that one. CD annuities vary a little bit different. We've got Guggenheim Life. Bankers Life's good with CD annuities.
So. It's just good to hear these. So whenever they pop up, we know what you're talking about. Oh, that's a company that's a company providing the annuity or the firm providing the annuity.
I pretty much don't do name dropping and won't get that specific, because if I start talking about a company and a specific product, what it can do, another company I left out is Equitrust. Then I have to give 5 minutes of disclaimer.
Disclaimers,
so not really 5 minutes, but we got to cover that. And one of the technical things is the annuities are backed up by the reserves of the insurance company. So you want to make sure you use a quality company as well. That should be looked at and considered. And there's a couple other things that support that also.
A lot of these have some funky names, but you can learn a lot because they put little pieces of information in the name.
Yeah, and when you think about it, you know, all these companies, they probably have like 10 or more different type of fixed products in their portfolio. So it's not just simply choose a company and let me have what they have. No, Allianz probably has a dozen you have to sort from. There's only a couple of them we like to use from Allianz as an example.
All right. If you have a question on this annuity discussion, how to know if you got a right one, or how to know if you're going to choose the right one if you're looking to buy one, if you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. We're going to do some comment cards from our women's event in the next segment. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap on iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. We're here till 1 o'clock live. Give us a call, 504-260-0995.
All right, to the phones we go. Earl in NOLA East, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you?
Well, I just wanted to find out, when will the feds address the interest rate? Whether it's going to go up or down. When is the next meeting?
This week, isn't it?
This coming week.
Uh-huh. Okay, because I like CDs, and I've got a few, but I'm not doing too well. You know, I'm not making a lot of money with them, but, I mean, you know, I don't really can't risk my money, so I'm an elderly person, retired, and I'm just wondering what I should do.
What kind of interest rate are you looking at right now at the bank?
2%.
2%? How many years is that for?
Well, for 12 months. This particular bank have a pretty good rate. I can mention it if you want.
I don't see why not.
Crescent. Crescent is a pretty good.
Well, I'd have to say, that's a pretty good number on a 2-year, I mean, on a 1-year rate, 2%.
Yeah.
But look, interest rates are moving higher in the future. They're supposed to address it this week. We ultimately don't know until they put out the announcement of whether they're staying the course or they're increasing. They'll also give you the outlook. Now, you might need an interpreter after they give it out, and that's what we will talk about. We'll help interpret that and read in between the lines. But I think it's somewhere around 25% chance they're going to increase this week, and it's over 50% for December. And the meeting last month, the Jackson Hole meeting, conference that they had, and it wasn't just a Fed meeting, but it was a gathering of central bankers from around the globe, but really what they focused on was this study saying basically they've done quantitative easing and cutting interest rates, and that turns out to not be a good mix. Why? We have the data. So they know, and they stated that they are behind the curve, and they need a number of rate hikes to get it where it should be. So this will be an interesting meeting here, because it could happen this week.
Well, I hope so, because, you know, the way the bank work is, if they go up, they'll allow you to hike up to one time. So, you know.
Okay. Well, I think it's part of the problem with the economy, you know, it's no secret how I feel about that. They should have had many hikes, and I think it is a problem because retirees like you aren't going to take risk. You're trying to live off savings, but, you know, 1% to 2% doesn't get it done, does it, Earl?
It sure does. I'll be calling you. I mean, okay. I'm going to see what they're going to do, and then I'll probably have to call somebody. I'll call you.
Okay.
Okay.
Look forward to hearing back from you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Earl. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995, or you can send us a text message via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, an app you should already have on your phone anyway. In fact, even if you don't have a message, go download it right now while you're listening to the show. I don't care if you're driving. You can do both. You can do both. If I can text, eat a burrito, and drive at the same time, you can download an app. Horrible advice.
You're not normal doing three things at once, and including driving. How many things do you have to do at once to drive? Well, driving is one of the things I'm doing. Then I'm eating a burrito and I'm texting. You're having to watch each lane on each side of, if you're on the interstate, what's in front of you, what's in back, your speed. And you're holding a phone and a burrito and steering with your knee.
Yes.
And you're supposed to be using the gas and brake pedals as well. That's a lot of things you're doing. I didn't even count, but that's probably six things you're doing to drive. And then you're eating a burrito and texting.
And it's easy.
And you say it doesn't happen to other people. You just increased your odds dramatically. Something bad could happen.
I don't get into car wrecks, Gregory. That doesn't happen to me. That's why I can do this. My biggest regret when I'm doing that is I don't have a free hand to flip people off. or to wave friendly, like to passing motorists.
No, they're mad because you look like you were swerving into them.
No, come on now.
You're just trying to return the flip, and that keeps you out of trouble, too, if both hands are on the steering wheel. Isn't it, what is it?
10 and 2?
10 and 2.
No, come on, man. That's the old way to do it. That's pre-airbag driver's ed. Since airbags, you have to do it down here because the airbags will break your arms. Swear to God, that's what they teach them now. You got to do it down, not at 10 and 2. What would that be? 4 and 8? Seriously, that's what they teach them now. You got to underhand drive so the airbag doesn't break your arms.
Well, the best positions if you're going high speed and driving like you're racing is almost between 9 and 10 and 2 and 3. Holding that wheel.
Oh, you got to do just the left hand at 12. That's what you do when you're going 100.
Okay, moving on. We know aren't like the rest of us.
No, I was asking you on the break. So when they give them these funky names, because I've been exposed to a handful of names, but it's only if a guy calls in or you're telling a story about a specific annuity. And I haven't really gone through like the glossary of terms on what they stick in there. So give me like the official title of just a random annuity and break down what the information we can glean from that is.
Okay. Ask me that again, you're trying to get
These people say, yes, I have an Allianz 243894B with a trailing something or other and like 10 other things in there. But that all means something to you. It means Greek to me.
I'll give you a simple one.
Okay.
Allianz 222 is one of their products.
There. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And actually, Allianz has this kind of two divisions there. And I can't tell you the name of the division because it doesn't matter to me. Well, it's called Allianz Preferred. And I know they've got 222 and 360 on that product. That product on that side of the preferred. They may have some others. 222 is simpler, in fact, because it's really designed for you to turn on income at 10 years or later is what it's designed to do.
How are you supposed to learn that from the 222? Like, are you learning that from the name? You know that from the name that's a 222?
Yeah, I know how a lot of this stuff works. I have to know.
Oh, so you're just already familiar with the 222.
Because there's times when people come in with products, you know, I'm reading the contracts, we're calling the company to figure out how does this work and such, and a lot of them, you know, was something that was sold a decade ago or something. So we have to look at how does this work? Is it going to do the job you're expecting it to do? And what are the exits? If it's not working or doing the job you want it to do, then what are the exits? It goes even when we have people come in with variables. We have to find out how this financial tool works to make sure it's doing the right job. Then once we find out how it works, how is it performing? Is it doing the job? Then that helps you get to, well, we stay the course, or how do we unwind this? How do we get their money out of that? So you can't come in and just make a machine. Well, I don't like these, so let's take your money out of it. Doesn't matter what I like or dislike. It matters on, is it performing for the client and doing what they want? And does that make sense? I, as a fiduciary, have to justify that. And you have a lot of, and it just is, now we're shifting subject a little bit, but you know what a lot of annuity reps do? They flip annuities. Find somebody, oh, I've got a better one. Or they've sold you one in the past and they go back to you, oh, this has a better income rider. Let me flip you out of this. And it's not flipping, but they'll say, well, let's transfer to this annuity.
And they reset the clock on these
systems. And it might even still be in surrender. And they said, well, the bonus is going to cover that. They're not doing the best thing for the client, and their business shouldn't be focused on that. That should be a good stay the course tool, unless it's justified. But you know, the Department of Labor ruling on qualified money and doing the right thing for the client, and they've got a best interest contract that's going to have to be signed by a higher authority than the person pushing the product, let's say, or advising for the product, is really going to stop this stuff. And then they've got to justify, you know, where somebody, for example, was selling Allianz all the time to, no matter who it was, they're selling them an Allianz product. Then they're going to have to justify, how did you come to that was the best one for that client? What all research did you do to come to that? And if they're doing that every time, they're in trouble in the future. Their business is in jeopardy.
All right, quick break here. In 3 minutes, we're going to go through some of the comment cards from this week's Women Winning at Life presents Gregory Ricks live event. And we're going to start off with a question about bonds. But if you have a question about any of these subjects, annuities, bonds, second opinions, you just got some money and want to turn on Social Security, you better call Gregory 504-260-0995 or send us a message via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. All right, welcome back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you have a financial situation and you want to bend the ear, you have our attention until 1 o'clock, 504-260-0995. All right, Gregory, finish the details. We're starting to get into some specifics here about an Allianz annuity and things we were learning from it.
Since you wanted me to describe one, that this one's pretty simple in how it works and the wills inside of it. So it's a 222 product. It's designed to really turn on income 10 years or out. It links to the upside of the S&P 500. So if the S&P 500 gained 2% this year, so what's 150% of that? It's 3%. So then your income value of the account, because it has an account value and income value, so the income value increases the 150%.
And the difference between those is the account value is the money that you get if you wanted to cash it out. The income value is what they base your payments on.
Yes, the lifetime income is based upon the income value. So that increases 150% each year based on what the S&P 500 does. Now, if the S&P 500 is negative for the year, your credit is zero on account value and income rider is zero. So what's 150% of zero? It's zero. So now there's also a bonus. I think it may be 20% bonus credited to the income account value, not the account value. So it gives it a jump based on what you deposit. Say example of 100,000. So you get a nice bonus on that front end.
So when you get
and don't hold me to it, because I would rather go look at, if we were sitting down in conference room and we were discussing this, we would have the exact and be confident. Because things change so much. You can see things change weekly because of interest rates and such. These products will change. We see changes almost every month in most of them because interest rate effects there causing to tweak things. So you, let's say you now at 10 years in, it's okay, yeah, I'm ready to turn on income. This is what I was expected to do. And you're going to know what the income percentage would be based upon assumed account values in the future. So they provide you a whole bunch of different historicals to look at. But if you turn, when you turn on the income, you can decide to just have a fixed amount that stays the same and it pays you a little bit more. But if you're willing to take a little bit less, then when the market increases each year, your income increases. That is a pretty good performing tool when you take that into consideration and you're drawing income, say 20 or 30 years to have that inflation effect that, yeah, the S&P's up means my income's going up this next anniversary.
So if I put 100 grand in that.
And typically, I'll just throw one other thing in, 10-year surrender period. It can be a walk-away account after 10 years.
But if I leave it in there, I can get a check.
For life.
For life. It's your own pension.
Yeah.
Never runs out.
You and the hot redhead, whoever lives longer, is going to get a check for life.
And never run out of money.
Never run out of checks.
So
the account, underlying account value could be depleted, but the checks don't stop. If you go to the bank, start drawing income, your savings, CD accounts run dry, what happens to the checks?
Stops. Okay.
You have a managed account, IRA, at Fidelity Investments, which is our custodian, and that IRA runs dry, checks stop. But when you have tools like this that create guaranteed lifetime income, and that's one of the purposes, you still have control of the underlying assets, but you technically you live long enough, it could deplete, but the checks keep coming.
Okay, so people don't do this as much as we tell them to. Go get a second opinion. My God, you're spending $200,000 of your own money. Why wouldn't you not go get another person to look at it? So in the rare instances,
they'll call a couple dealerships when they're looking for a Honda Accord four-door. EX, for example, they're
shopping around. Second opinion,
but they're not
call their
a
mechanic.
Second opinion when they're dealing with their life's work. And you know, I have strict criteria. Everybody looks at it differently. We surely do.
So when someone does come in with a second opinion, what do you find often that gets overlooked, or usually do you just kind of?
It's not correlated to their assets. And that's the biggest thing. It's not a coordinated plan because, let's say, an annuity-only guy, all he can talk about is annuities. He can't talk about your 401k. He can't talk with you and advise you on your managed money or those mutual funds or the variable. All he can talk about is fixed annuities. And typically on the brokerage side, they can't deal in the fixed annuity side. So you have a huge disconnect, so you probably should give a second opinion. I'm biased. I think it should be us because we work in all three worlds. We never ever pressure, and we're going to call the company. We're going to make sure you understand. And I don't want to talk to the rep or agent or whoever that sold you that. We're calling the company and making sure you have the right information. If you have an existing one, you won't get questions answered about, or you're considering putting money in one, and you need to, you know, what's kind of the things to ask? What's my risk if I go forward with this decision? Because some people think they're getting a fixed, but they're getting a variable, which is going to have risk. Also, what are my fees? What are my exits? What is the surrender period? If it's more than 10 years, should give you pause. Almost kind of that run for the hills type thing.
Okay, so second opinions on annuities. Call the office 504-832-9200 or go to GregoryRicks.com or grab the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Now, getting to the comment cards from this week's event. We had Women Winning at Life presents Gregory Ricks Live. It was a ladies-only affair. Kind of nice when the guys are out the room. It seemed a lot more smiles. Lot less serious, man. At all stoic. I'm serious. We're here for
business.
Yeah,
even when the women get us more of a serious look, and they're all smiling, meeting each other. You know, it's kind of like an all women's cruise ship. You know, they're just all happy to be there, having a good time, making friends.
They were more talkative. They were more participative. Is that a word? They participated more. trying to make up words here.
We always see more participation when the men aren't around. You know, you're not elbowing the redhead and saying,
"Shut up!
Yeah,
you're embarrassing me."
Do not ask that.
All right. So
you know what's the dumbest question you can ask?
What?
Not asking.
To the comment cards.
Because there's not a... Do we ever tell a caller, like, you shouldn't have called and asked me that question. Really, have we blew off somebody that... Oh, God. Hadn't you been listening? No. Every question is awesome. I'm just... And I firmly believe that. And we get off the air and it's like, wow, that was such a great question. People needed to hear the answer because we've never discussed it that way.
Guys don't have much of a filter. They're like, what about my Iraqi dinar, guy? You should be embarrassed. Hey, here, look, this one's pretty vague and wide open, but it's nice and short. Should I invest in bonds? Some lady that came to our event Wednesday, that's all she wanted to know. Should I invest in bonds?
That can well be a part of your portfolio, but to be straight out, can you? Yes. Should you? I don't know in her particular situation. Possibly. It could be there in some way. Like if she is conservative, we're definitely doing it through part of our ETF strategy for that conservative portfolio.
To the phones we go. John in New Orleans, you're first up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Hey, thank you guys for taking my call. I have a 401k at my work, and it is giving me really bad returns. Obviously, the match is great, and I'm trying to push them to switch to a different backer, I guess. I'm not sure what the underlying asset company is.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations on companies that work with companies like mine?
How big is it? Is it your company or you're an employer?
I'm an employee of a company.
Okay. Yeah. How many employees there, by the way?
We have about 70, but I don't think nearly that many participate in the 401k plan. I think it's probably closer to only about 25.
Wow. Small number.
So there's a chance he could get his employer to switch, maybe?
Could. It's not that simple of a process, because actually at some point they have to end that plan to start the other. So it's almost a year-end deal. Then you need to vet that, because the company actually has enormous liability making sure they're doing the best thing for the employees. But if you can kind of keep prodding them to encourage them, there is so many to choose from. There's lots of plans. Any major firm does 401k administration, you know, Fidelity Investment, Wells Fargo, you know, you just Morgan Stanley, you just name them. They're doing it.
You think there's a chance maybe he's just not picking the right option under his existing 401k plan, or could they all just be stinking right now?
They all could just be stinking. It could also be selection. I don't know the company, the plan, or the choices. It could be a lot of things. It could be this crazy market we've had the past 18 months.
All right, John in New Orleans, thank you very much for your call. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. We're entering hour two. We started at 10. We do this every Saturday live, the weekly wrap. Weeknights, by the way, we have the Winning at Life daily wrap. One thing I want to throw in there is if you're looking for us and you can't find us terrestrial and you know on the air feed, go to the stream. Download iHeartRadio app, download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, all of them will link you, and you can use your station in our local market. So we know at times certain obligations we get preempted at times in the markets that we're in. But I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. James Parker is here with us, as always. And we have Jude Heath here in the second hour, CPA.
Yeah, I was sorry, you can take that microphone over. I was using as sort of signage for our Periscope feed. Welcome back, Jude. He is the CPA of our Total Wealth Authority, and we're going to talk a little bit about his experience at Wednesday's live event. We're going to go over some comment card questions that apply to him. And in this hour, we're going to cover what to know about late filing and late paying penalties when it comes to your taxes. Because you're an irresponsible... Don't worry, I am too. It happens. But first, we got to talk to... Oh, wrong button. Lewis in Hammond. You're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to James, Gregory, and Jude. How can we help you, sir?
I purchased a 10-year annuity through Allianz, and my impression was a 10-year annuity was at 10 years, you could get your money out and reinvest it in something. But that doesn't look like the case. Why is that?
They're not all 10-year surrender periods. Some are longer. If you have older ones, there could be the case where it was annuitization. And I'll tell you, Allianz in the past had designed some products where there wasn't a cash out, but you could income out over a certain period of time. And that's why you always have to question the, you know, those core questions I have. You have to question what you're getting. Is there risk? What's the surrender period? How can I get my money out? What are those options? And when is it completely walk away? You want some clarity on that.
Well, listening to your show all the time, I've been wanting to call before, and now I'm learning all of this stuff. You know, I'm thinking they tell you 10-year annuity, 10 years it should be over, but that doesn't look like this is the case.
So what company is it with?
Allianz.
Okay. How long ago did you set that up?
I think in 2 more years would be my 10 years.
Uh-huh.
It would have to be 8 years. And you get to take 10% out with no penalty. But
and that would be during the surrender period.
Right. And if it gets down to $10,000 at 10%, $1,000 a year, that's 10 years just to get $10,000 out.
Yeah, but at the end of 10 years, I'm assuming you're accurate on the surrender period, and it's a 10-year surrender period, I would think that has a walk-away option on that at the end of the 10 years. During the surrender period, there's a fee for walk-away. That's why it has a surrender period, that if you're going to opt out.
Correct. Right. I've seen that on the paper.
Yeah.
I wanted to opt out.
Can you name the product?
I don't have the name. Now I'm listening to all your numbers. I'm going back to look at my policy and try to figure out what's going on here.
Well, you can also call my office on Monday. It is 504-832-9200, and we can help you with more specifics on that and get some clarification. We just, you know, one thing about this is, Lewis, that it's a lot of information, and you probably went over it several years ago and may not have much discussion about it since. And what we want to make sure you understand how it works. So sometimes you could forget, or the person that helped you with it kind of just glazed over it.
That's
told you
happens.
All the positive things and not the negative things. And
right.
And you have to talk about both, and you have to talk about how does it fit what your objective is, and that's why you have to talk about both, because that negative might be, I can't do that. And some people, you know, and I'll tell you this, there's some people that don't want risk, but the other thing is they don't want a 10-year surrender period. They don't want a 5-year surrender period. So that really limits their choices. It might be like our caller earlier that, you know, what does he like? CDs, 1-year rates. Okay, so in a case like that, he kind of likes 1-year surrender period. So it always varies, but our thing is we can help you, and we'll make sure you understand how your contract is working, because you can call us, and then we'll maybe do a call, or we'll just look it up. We might have the information on hand and help you with that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, being a longtime listener, and calling.
Appreciate it, Lewis.
You know, that's so many people, they're thinking, I should have called. I've been wanting to call. You know, and if you're not wanting to get on the radio thing, call on the air, you can email me, Gregory@GregoryRicks. We'll answer it on the air. You can text us through the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. And what's easy? Call the office, business hours during the week. We're going to take the call and get you an answer back.
And that was the quintessential broker versus the dietitian. Wait, butcher versus the dietitian. I said that backwards. Because if you go to McDonald's, hey, what's a good thing about this hamburger? Well, it's got lettuce, tomatoes, pickles. You go to a nutritionist.
Special sauce.
Yeah, lettuce, cheese. Now, if you go to a nutritionist, though, if you go to the fiduciary version, then he's like, maybe you need to eat a piece of fruit, Parker. Have you seen your midsection lately?
Those, apples and walnuts.
Ah, oh, don't give me that.
Back on the burger.
Let's talk to Jude over here. We have Jude Heath in, the CPA of the Total Wealth Authority. He is one of the members of the Justice League of your financial world that we've assembled here. And today we're talking about late filing and late paying penalties. Yeah, who are these losers, Jude, that don't file their taxes on time? What kind of person would let, I don't know, maybe 2, sometimes 3 years pile up before they just dump it on their accountant a few weeks ago? I mean, what kind of loser are we talking about?
Well, hold on. I think that's a little bit strong.
I'm talking about me, Gregory.
Okay, but I still think it's a little bit strong. There is circumstances now, and things can get overwhelming. They can get behind, and what they have, I think, when we've had discussions about this, Jude, is then it's kind of the fear. Now, if you've not filed in 10 years, yeah, you're carrying a major load of stress, but you're purposely, mentally, you've like disconnected and you have major problems. But I can see where stuff gets behind. So I just
be
a little more gentle.
Well, you know, some people have more than one job and 4 kids and they're just a basket case to begin with. But
let me throw in it. What about, we had a caller the other night, Jude, and I don't mean to interrupt the question, but I just thought this is a good point. They receive cash income. Her husband does. He works in the building industry, receives cash income. They don't get 1099s or anything. And she called in asking about how do we get the ability to show income? If somebody's wanting proof of income, how would we do that? And basically the point was you need to start filing a tax return. Even though you're getting cash, you have to put some income on there and pay taxes on it because they're going to want to see a 1040 if you're wanting to buy a house, for example.
Well, that's one side of it, is maybe qualifying for a home loan. The other side of it is that, you know, the IRS does a little thing called what they call lifestyle audit.
Absolutely.
This is new to me. What's a lifestyle audit?
If you accumulate all these possessions and you've never shown income on your tax returns,
James, you're living in a $2 million house. You drive a Ferrari. The hot redhead drives a Land Rover. Your kid's going to private school, and you're showing $60,000 a year in income.
Okay, that's a little suspicious. But
okay, that's lifestyle. That there's something amiss here. Audit's coming your way.
Right. And so I didn't talk to the caller, but you know what we encourage our cash income folks to do is, you know, deposit that cash and start, you know, making it bankable, show your deductions and start filing. And
I didn't think of that part, but that's good. Yeah, you should be putting it in a bank.
It's just too hard to not spend a pile of cash. So if you put it in the bank, it all becomes part of your budget.
It is showing up then. You're on the grid and you better file your return.
And my accounting 1301 is about to rear its ugly head. It's basically giving you a general ledger.
It's the start.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the start. Depositing is revenue. It's the start.
You'd have been really handy on Thursday when this lady called in, because then Gregory and I on the next break were talking about all the consequences if you don't file. Then, my God, what if you need to get a mortgage? How are you going to be able to get just your credit score or the ability to pay or show income? You know, that's going to be a big mess. When Social Security rolls around and you weren't contributing to the Social Security system, what's your check going to look like? Are you going to get the minimum indigent check? Because that's not what you deserve. It's not what you should get. Well, I guess you should if you haven't been paying your taxes. But, it may seem kind of cool that you're avoiding taxes now, but you may pay a bigger price by not doing the right thing. You know, ethically speaking, you should be doing it already. But yeah, mathematically speaking, it's going to hurt you too.
You can't show up at a dealer and buy a $24,000 Honda Accord and hand them over a bag of cash. That's a red flag right there. Remember, transactions $10,000 and above, or multiple sequencing of the same amount for less, is going to show up also. So you have to kind of get on the grid.
Yeah.
And it just starts with bank deposits.
Yeah, it starts with just, you know, taking the income that you get from this job or contract work and depositing it and having checks and writing your bills out of checks rather than paying cash wherever you go.
Well, the concern, of course, is going to be, why should I pay taxes when I don't have to? But really, if you're a guy that's making cash and there's a good chance your income is going to be low enough, the tax hit could be nil or just minimal to begin with.
Well, we'll talk about that after the break, but I do see folks that bear a lot of stress from not filing.
504-260-0995. If you have a financial or specifically a tax question, we got our CPA, Jude Heath, in the building. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Hey, we're still kind of new to our Biloxi listeners. Welcome. Nice to meet you. I'm James Parker. The guy across the table with me is a financial supercomputer with a Mississippi accent. So he's just your neighbor, Gregory Ricks. Also joining us in studio, and he does this about once a month, Jude Heath. He's a CPA of the Total Wealth Authority. Now listen up, new folks. Hey, there may be some new folks on the WRNO feed as well. We are your show. If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, give us a call. You're driving around with some sort of financial rain cloud over your head like Ziggy, those old Ziggy Hallmark cards. It doesn't have to be that way. You can get some answers right now because a lot of this stuff, where else are you going to go? Who else could you call? You can't call anyone on MSNBC or, I'm sorry, CNBC or Fox Business. You can't call any other radio show if you need to know when and where to turn on Social Security, if you need to know the ins and outs of an annuity versus an ETF. There's not a whole lot of options. That's what we're here for. Give us a call, 504-260-0995, or you can message us text via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. All right, now, thanks for joining us here in studio, Jude Heath. You were at our, this was an inaugural event, Women Winning at Life presents Gregory Ricks Live. All ladies, your thoughts on the differences there?
You know, I thought it was wonderful. There was a lot less grumbling. You know, Gregory will say something during one of the evening's events, and, you know, the guys kind of take it on the chin, and you listen to it, you know, a murmur. The ladies, they just kind of, you know, took it all in stride. They accepted him as the expert and just, you know, moved along with the evening. And a lot of handshaking, familiarity. They were just really pleasant to be around. It was a great event.
Do you notice how loud it was right before we started? Not that they're ill-behaved, but how social they are. Without any guys around, they're moving around. Oh, I know you, or did you go to school with so-and-so, or what grade are you, or it's, you know, is your kid doing this, or I have a grandson in ballet. I heard a bunch of that.
Yes.
And we kind of had to interrupt the fun there. They had a party started. Sorry, ladies.
Making a lot of connections.
Now, did you get any different questions?
From the comment cards that came in, I didn't see the questions changing that much. It looked like it was kind of a lot of the same: retirement, Social Security, annuities, asset distribution, a lot of things that, you know, Gregory can address.
Well, when I look at the comment cards, I notice they are much easier to read because women clearly have superior penmanship.
Correct.
What's with our penmanship? Like, I intentionally write legibly because I write in big blocky letters. But I'm the exception here. Most of us have just horrible chicken scratch handwriting. Do we even notice? It's because we're so self-centered. Women are thinking about other people. Is this going to be easy to read? Is this going to look beautiful? Is this going to look like a bit flowing prose here? All right, let's start with one of the comment cards right here. Addressing taxes and financial debt. And they even put, look, Jude is in parentheses there. See how nice the ladies are?
Mm-hmm.
Jude. Look, I should read the whole card so you get the context. I started over at 60, addressing taxes and financial debt, all due to medical challenges, intended to return to work contractually, or intend to return to work contractually. All right, so addressing taxes and financial debt in that context, what would your response to that one be?
Well, the first thing she talked about was working contractually in the medical field. So one of the first things that we would talk to her about is...
No. She had medical challenges. That's why she had to just start over at 60. She tends to work contractually. I don't think it was necessarily
in the medical field.
Yeah,
okay.
That wasn't specific in
okay.
there.
Okay. But it doesn't matter. The industry... Sure. If she works contractually, you know, we want to take advantage of all the deductions that are available to her, all the retirement plans that are available to self-employed to help her start to rebuild at 60. So that is, yes, tax questions, but she's absolutely right. The financial aspect of her situation is more important than the taxes.
Yeah, and if she was doing taxes by herself, she could miss a few things. Home office.
Yes.
You know, that's a situation I'm in. I've got an 11 by 17 room and an otherwise 1,700 square foot house. So whatever X proportion of that. What are the rules around that?
So it has to be exclusive use.
It is.
And you have to not have another office. So you can't have, you know, an office where you regularly see customers, but, you know, work out of this office.
Okay.
And if you're an employee, it has to be for the employer's benefit. We've seen that lately with a lot of outsourcing where that just employers don't want to pay for all the square footage. So they'll have employees work off site.
Okay, so once we have it established that it's legit, then what are the savings that come from it?
So the maintenance and upkeep of the home, including the utilities, prorated times the percent of square footage of the office compared to the total of the home. So that's a mathematical calculation. There's an IRS form that you fill it out.
So if it's 10% of my house's square footage, then 10% of my electric bill,
correct.
10% of the check I write to the security company.
Correct.
Every 6 months, 10% of my Terminix bill.
Correct. General repairs, like if you have to have...
an air conditioner?
Yes.
You know.
So general house repairs, not anything specific. You can't, repair your master bath and then deduct that against your home office. But, anything generally to the upkeep of the home.
What about I need to buy a new lawnmower? Is that pushing it? Because I do need to buy a new lawnmower. I'll go buy that sucker with my business debit card if I can.
So there is some aspect to having some landscaping in your house, but a lawnmower would more be like an asset. We'd have to talk about
that. You gotta stop me, man, because I will push
you're
it.
You're going to go.
Yeah. I will push everything.
It's a reach.
Yeah. It is. It's a huge reach. But if it's legal, I'm taking it.
I'll tell you one of the easy things that a lot of self-employed people miss is just keeping a mileage log. That has become in audit, in IRS audits, low-hanging fruit. They walk in and they say, okay, you've deducted X for your car expenses. Let's see your mileage log. And if you can't produce it, if all you can produce is spreadsheets or some kind of a reformulation of your calendar for that year, they're going to charge you back for that those car expenses. And over the 2 or 3 years that they get, that can be substantial for self-employed individuals.
That does sound scary. Okay, so back to the comment card here. It sounds like she had some medical issues. Now, going forward, does she need to somehow structure that into her tax planning? I mean, HSA is coming to mind immediately, but is that the right route we should take?
Well, yeah. I mean, the first question is, is she insured now? And I'm not really a medical insurance person, but where does she stand in, Affordable Care Act? How close is she to Medicare? Those types of questions, too. We would talk about those.
All right. Anything else you would address or bring up for the lady in that first card or the card I have on top?
The biggest thing that I see is the ability to start to rebuild by her contract work. And that is, saving taxes by taking advantage of everything by the law and then also implementing some type of a retirement plan with the time that she has left to work.
And is any of that changing if she doesn't have a spouse?
That's a fluid situation, so it can change whether she's married or not.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jude Heath. Let's get into some of this what to know about late filing and late paying penalties. Just this is an impossible question to answer on the spot, but what do you think the proportion is of your clients who have late filings?
Well, we do get folks that come in with several years, and I don't know why, but taxes tend to scare a lot of taxpayers. So maybe they just don't have good advisors like us. But the main thing coming up with October the 15th, which is the final extended deadline for 2015, the reason why I wanted to address this today is because the IRS specifically says it's always cheaper to file even if you don't have the money for the taxes that you owe. There's a substantial late filing penalty, and the late payment penalty is substantially less than late filing penalty. So we always talk to our clients in terms of file now, even if it's not completely pulled together. The IRS allows you to adjust your record. It's called an amended return. They always want that to be your numbers. You own your tax filings and get it filed before the deadline. That reduces your penalties and whatever payment workout plan or tax payment plan that we have to work out with them on your behalf, it'll ultimately reduce the amount of taxes that you have to pay.
What's the deadline we just passed, September 15th? What's that one?
The entities, LLCs, were due on September the 15th. Calendar year.
But define that, calendar year entities.
Fiscal year means that it might not end on December the 31st, the entities.
Gregory, yeah. Some of this is over my head, and you might have to help me out. All right, so but I have an LLC. I have different dates then?
No, you would have to ask for a different filing year other than December the 31st. I presume you haven't.
Okay.
Are you wondering if you should have filed yet?
Well,
is
no,
that the look I see in there?
No, I've already thrown all my stuff at him.
Okay.
I'm just wondering.
Okay.
I didn't know there was a different deadline. I thought I was slated to go
at
April 15th.
Well, the big deadline is April 15th, but with extensions, but now you're coming to, you got to do it.
So the extension lasts till September 15th?
For entities.
For entities that file apart. Not to get too complicated, but there is something called a single member LLC that files as a part of an individual tax return.
Okay. Well, if you have a financial or tax question, Jude Heath is in studio, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
The contents of this show are meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to take place of your attorney, accountant, tax professional, personal trainer, football coach, interior decorator, or those fortune tellers at Jackson Square. Please consult a financial advisor before making all investment decisions.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is a registered investment advisory firm. If you'd like a copy of Form ADV, our full disclosures, call the office 504-832-9200 or go to gregoryricks.com.
Some beach, somewhere, there's a big umbrella casting shade over an empty chair. Palm trees are growing and warm breezes blowing.
Welcome back to Winning at Life. This is the weekly wrap. You're listening to us on iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. James Parker's with me, and we have Jude Heath as a guest this hour. We're kind of talking about people that file late, pay late. You know, you see all these commercials, late night TV, you know, I don't know. It just seems like they just make up names. But if you hadn't filed taxes in 20 years or you owe debt of $10,000 or more, call us at 1-800 and we can save you. And here's another that gets me. The IRS has a special program, limited time.
Oh, I love those.
To make this all go away.
If you owe $7 million in taxes, we can get you out of there for $84. Yeah. And the names are getting more severe, too.
The thing is, I don't know how you listen to it, but I know that's a bit misleading in how they do that. And there isn't some special short-term program that makes this all go away. But actually, if somebody's hearing that and saying, gosh, I need help, couldn't they just call you?
Oh, of course.
Instead of dealing with somebody in Utah?
Of course. And, okay. And one of the things that we've seen over the years is that there is the interstate law thing that if they do not perform and you have deposited money with them, you have to go sue them in their state. And so over the years, what we've encouraged taxpayers to do, if they come in and say, I've sent $5,000 to dingotax.com to get rid of my tax problems, what we say is, okay, that's done. Let's connect with them and let me take the filings from them, because they'll inundate the taxpayer with filing requirements that the taxpayer didn't know how to do, otherwise it would have done it. And so sometimes we can rescue that and get them some help. But a lot of times the dingotax.coms of the worlds, it's just as overwhelming to the taxpayers. They're not as helpful. It's not a lot of hand holding. So we encourage people to use local providers like us.
Can I add one other thing to it? It's what they're referring to when they say, well, you owe $7 million, but we could get you out of this for $84, and it probably wouldn't be that low. Just say for $8,400. That's called offer and compromise. It's not some temporary program, but it's basically a filing to, hey, I need some help. I can't pay all of this. And it's a lot of documents and backup. And really what it comes down to is they're going to look at your ability to pay. And if they think you can pay that amount owed, they're not cutting a deal. So you've got to show the inability to make a go of it and pay them. And then what ends up after that is you're probably going to have to agree on a number, and they'll do a contract, and you pay them so much a month for certain period of time. Am I right?
That's correct. It's called an offer and compromise. And 2 points about that is taxpayers need to realize that for an offer and compromise, you get assigned your own personal agent, a local agent.
An IRS agent?
Yes. And they stay with you. It's not just a month and the agent moves on. It's a period of time where they watch your earnings, they watch your expenses. It's an entire personal balance sheet of credit card expenses, and you don't get to go buy a new Jaguar and have a note on it if you have an offer and compromise. That's not allowed. You're only allowed a certain amount of transportation expenses under an offer and compromise situation. So that's the first point to make is that they monitor your financial ability.
And then you have a hall monitor that's just following you around. How expensive is that?
Well, they are sort of in your pocket in that you've got to report to them monthly, this is my paycheck and this is how I spent it. And so that you need to make sure. First thing we do when folks come in and want an offer and compromise is let's scrub up your taxes, because we want to make sure that you haven't done anything, taken anything that you weren't due. And then the second point is you can't have any borrowing ability, because the IRS is going to say, well, we're not going to write off your taxes when you can go get a home equity line of credit and pay full. So it's earnings power, you know, future earnings power, the ability to borrow, and just knowing that you've got this taxpayer that you've got to report to every month as to your earnings and how you spent it.
Can't they just do what the private sector companies do and hire some collection firm to hound you for it?
Well, they are kind of their own collection firm and are sending you letters often because of this problem. You're owing a bunch of money. They're coming after you. If you don't pay, they're going to start seizing stuff. They're going to lock up your bank accounts. They're going to put liens against your property. So you have to do something. This isn't like you borrowed money to start this business from so-and-so, and he's going to put a lien on the business. He's limited. The IRS is not limited. They're going to hound you and come after you. Now, and what he was stating is if you're getting an offer and compromise and they will accept the last payment, you're going to be in a bind life going forward anyhow, because you can't earn money. You're not going to make enough money. So therefore, you wouldn't be able to buy a car or borrow. You're in a bad way financially, and that's why they're cutting the bill. Otherwise, if you've got the potential to do all those things, they're not compromising anything, and they're going to put you on a payment plan. So you might as well work that out, and don't miss a darn check, because then they go to seizing again.
How long do you have a hall monitor?
Well, it can be years.
If you get into the compromise. If you just say, you know, if you're denied or say, you know what, let's just set up a payment plan so I can pay you back the $60,000.
Then
you're good. You're clear. You don't have a hall monitor, but don't miss no payments.
Right. And so, you know, a hall monitor, you know, you get assigned an IRS agent.
I'm sorry to ruin the sanctity of the terms you were using over there with hall monitor, but.
So, they will watch how you spend your money, and they'll also force you to sell assets that have value. So you could go from being a homeowner.
Not have a lien on it.
You're going to lose your scooter now.
What are they're going to now? Now we got problems. We need to fix these taxes. How do they force you to sell something? Like, well, they list it on Craigslist for you?
No, they don't. But they're not going to give you an offer in compromise if you've got $1 million in equity in your house. So that's my point.
You're supposed to be in a bad way. So that's why I brought up those commercials, because people are like, oh wow, I can get rid of this $60,000. Yeah, I could pay as little as a grand. You're in a bad way if they're doing a compromise.
So this sounds sort of like the
commercials are just misleading.
Yes.
This sounds like to qualify for Medicaid. But, oh, this will be great. The government will cover my medical expenses. Well, yeah, you got to be in a bad situation though for that to kick in.
Yep. Right. Right. And the point about all those out of state firms is, you know, they're paid up front, and whether they work something out for you or not, they're paid up front, and contractually you sign, you know, they've done their best, so there's no refunds.
All right, let's talk about some of the penalties that you face and if you're filing late.
So the biggest one, the largest one is the penalty for late filing. So that's 5% of tax due per month up to 25%. That's stiff, and it happens quick. So if you owed $1,000, you'd pay 5% per month up to 25%. So we encourage, you know, all taxpayers who come in, file now, file on time. You know, let's figure out the balance that you owe and work something out. If you can, if you're due an offer in compromise, we can work that for you. But then if you just need a payment plan, one of the things that Gregory mentioned was that the IRS has, you know, limited time availability of special programs. After 2008, they extended sort of like the no questions asked monthly payment from being 5 years, 60 months to being 6 years, 72 months. That's one of the initiatives that the IRS put in for anything under $50,000 that you owe the IRS. So that's one of the things that they brag about, is these new IRS initiatives. It's just an extended payment period.
In like 5 seconds, what happens if you don't owe them money and they owe you money? That 5% penalty just poof, goes away?
Correct.
They say thank you for not filing this return?
Unless the 3-year statute of limitations on refunds has expired.
Oh, right.
then you don't get your refund back.
But that, there's no 3-year statute of limitations going the other direction, is there?
No. We've seen people that was behind and realized, God, if I'd have filed, I'd have got that back. Yeah, yes. But you can't.
All right,
got
to run. It's Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome to Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Joining us in studio for one more segment here, Jude Heath. He is the CPA of the Total Wealth Authority. Jay Heath. Is it Jay Heath and Associates or Jay Heath?
Jay Heath and Company.
And Company. I knew there was an and there. Dang it. We haven't said this in a while. The cleverness of your naming comes from the first initial you share with your wife.
That's correct. So we... Jennifer and I, both J's, and we said Jay Heath and Company is a natural.
So Jennifer Heath got married to, or Jude Heath got married to Jennifer something or other, but now they're Jennifer Heath and Jude Heath, and they're both CPAs, and they went to business together. What's that like, working with your wife? Y'all ever get sick of each other?
It's happily ever after.
Wow, smart answer. Smart answer, sir. See, I have the opposite problem where I don't see my wife enough, so we're never going to get sick of each other. You know, we're always trying to find time to spend with each other. I imagine, though, in your situation, I'm glad y'all get along pretty well, because that could ruin your life, you ruin your family, ruin your business, everything, maybe even your taxes.
We do a lot of taxes, you know, together. We talk tax.
Okay, so one thing we need to touch on, since we only have you for one more segment here, right now you're doing estimates for 2016. Now, when you mentioned that to me, my initial reaction was like, what do you mean tax estimates, like what you got to pay in? Are we talking about small business owners, or are we talking about... people who are self-employed?
It could be self-employed. It could be employees. It just depends on whether you think you're going to be underwithheld as of, or underpaid as of January 15th of 17. And so we're doing tax calculations for taxpayers to make sure that they don't owe on April the 15th of 17. So when we talk about being a proactive tax filer, that's one of the things we talk about, is paying your taxes when they're due.
See, that's something I would have liked to have known years ago. One thing that used to tick me off is, just tell me how much I have to pay to make sure I don't have to pay at the end of the filing season. And if you're one of the people, not you, Jude, the guy listening, if you're one of the people that was ticked when you filed your taxes on April 15th or this tax season and you weren't getting money back, this is how we fix that. This is how when you go into the next April 15th, you're not going to get a surprise bill, because that's the tough part. That's basically when I became a fiscal conservative. First time I did my taxes and I didn't get money back, that was impossible. So where am I going to find $700? You know, I'm 26 years old, finally made, you know, more than, you know, bare bones out there, and I'm getting punished for it.
Right. And so we've seen over and over that if you wait to calculate your taxes to April 15th of the following year, a lot of times if you owe, it comes out of savings. Whereas if we if we proactively make an estimate now, we can make changes before the end of the year that could possibly lower the taxes that you owe on April the 15th. And so that's one of the reasons why we encourage our clients, don't just do taxes once a year. Let's at least do them twice a year.
Well, and learn from last year's mistake. And if you wait until January 1st to do some changes, it's too late.
Correct.
You're going to have to pay that refund no matter, or pay that additional bill instead of get a refund no matter what.
Right.
So what does that look like? Just adjusting your withholding? Is it something simple as that?
It can be if we can't find a way to lower your taxes. You know, one of the things that we can talk about is, are you fully funding your retirement? Can we make another retirement contribution before the end of the year that could lower your taxes? So there's every line item on the tax return is available to us in the tax estimate.
Yeah, and something else, if you're doing these early estimates, do a little more bracket management.
Correct. Whether you double pay property taxes in one year to take advantage of itemizing versus a standard deduction, that everything's available.
Wait, double paying property taxes one year. Explain that one.
Well, if you don't have if it's not on escrow and you pay property taxes on your house, some folks pay advance one year, you know, that don't itemize or kind of on the level of item, on the edge of itemizing every year. They'll double pay property taxes one year, January and December, and then not pay it the following year. So one year they would take a standard deduction, and the next year they would itemize. It's just another way to kind of control the brackets a little bit.
All right. Let's look at this. Go down this list of penalties here, because we talked about, I think, the first two, but I don't know what half of this stuff means, and I need your interpretation skills.
Sure. So the first thing to know is that the late payment penalty and the late filing penalty are not mutually exclusive. They operate together. So you can be penalized for both. So it's a combined penalty. And the IRS does encourage for you to file even if you can't pay. That for extended individuals, the ones that are due April 15th, late payment penalties may not apply if you've paid at least 90% of the taxes that you owe by April the 15th, which is the due date. There's some special rules there, but you can avoid some penalties for not having paid all your taxes at April the 15th. And this is especially important for some of the areas that have been hit by the floods. There's no penalty if reasonable cause for late payment. So in the event that those folks have been extended to December and January, but in the event that they can't get their tax paperwork together even by then, and when we do get it filed, we can ask the IRS extenuating circumstances, they were rebuilding their house. The IRS will consider reasonable cause to reduce the penalties.
So if you're in one of the flood areas, even if you didn't get damaged, you can still get new deadlines? Do you know that off the top of your head, how the deadlines move?
You have the new deadlines if you're in one of those parishes. It's basically Southern Louisiana. It's almost every parish in Southern Louisiana.
Yeah, North Shore over to Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm. And so, and you don't have to have damage in order to get the extended filing deadline. What we're talking about here is if you didn't make that extended filing deadline, and could you show reasonable cause for not being penalized? Say, like you were 2 months late. You filed in March of 2017 for 2015, and in that case, you would have to show, you know, damage or some extenuating circumstance for some reasonable cause, something that the IRS agent that's reviewing the penalty case can hang their hat on and say, okay, we'll reduce these penalties.
Well, that makes the IRS seem just a slightly less heartless.
You'll find that most of the agents are living and breathing, and they
that's will questionable.
Listen. They will listen. They do have to protect the treasury.
Okay. What about file even if you can't pay? How does that even work?
So let's say, you know, we do our best and you owe $10,000 in taxes on October the 15th.
Okay.
File it even though you can't pay it. We see so many times people, I couldn't have afforded those taxes, and they wait years. As you can see, the penalty for late filing is much higher than the penalty for late paying. And so that's what the IRS is saying there, is that file even if you can't pay. In the event that, you know, there was a number off and we need to amend it to true it up, certainly can do that. But you can start the process of a payment plan, and that's a lot cheaper than not filing until you can afford the taxes.
If you're a do-it-yourself tax filer on the North Shore Baton Rouge area, is there anything special you got to do to take advantage of some of these reasonable cause situations from the flood?
Well, it just depends on how the self-prepared people are doing it. If they're doing it the paper way, there are notes that you have to make on the very front of the return that says, you know, flood, Louisiana flood of 2016, and there's a note you have to make on Louisiana return. So you show the agent. As far as the free softwares that are available, I'm not sure how they're handling the flood extensions. But that would certainly be glad to help anybody that needed just a help over a hurdle.
All right, Jude Heath, CPA of the Total Wealth Authority. If you have a question, 504-260-0995. Now, you and your wife, both CPAs, both tax specialists, both at the same firm. Which one of y'all is better? If y'all were in the accountant Olympics, who would get the silver and who would get the gold?
I think we more would just pass the baton. We're in that race.
Safe guy. Yeah. Look at this guy.
We both have our strengths.
See how good he would be again in an audit situation? Unflappable, unshakable, this Jude. You can't even, you're not even doing the deferral thing where, of course she's better. Listen, she's the real brains of the operation, and I just get all the credit. You weren't even that. It was a total punt. Good job.
Thank you.
Very safe. You can tell he's been married for a while. Never divorced either, right?
No, sir.
There's a reason for that. He's a smooth cat. Jude Heath, thank you very much for your time. And he will be in attendance at our next Gregory Ricks Live event Wednesday, October 12th. Or you will. You don't have anything planned for that, right?
No.
Okay. So I was going to tell you to cancel it. All right. Jude Heath, thank you very much. How do they get in touch with your office?
832-1873-504. So we'd be happy to help anyone that needs help.
Say it slower and in order.
504-832-1873.
He's got an 832 number too. Did y'all do that on purpose?
I think so.
Because Gregory's office, 832-9200. We know someone at the phone company. We're smooth like that. All right. If you have a financial situation, you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory. You can be next. We're going to continue with the financial education and advice in the next segment. Lauren and Metairie, you're going to be first up when we get back. 504-260-0995, or you can send us a text message via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. This is the place you get your financial fix. We've got one more hour to go. Give us a call, 504-260-0995.
Yeah, coming up in this hour, we're going to answer some more comment cards from our Women Winning at Life presents Gregory Ricks live event this week. And we have some more financial news of the week. And in fact, I want to run through the math calculations that were in this USA Today money article. Where they talk about how really the new retirement age is not 65 anymore. Social Security tells you it's 66. It's really 70. That's where the math is hitting the sweet spot for the majority of people who are looking at retirement in modern day America. You want to just jump right in this, Gregory? Back in the comment cards? You looking at monkeys over there? What's going on?
I'm looking at some health stuff, a couple of tips I'm going to sprinkle during this last hour.
Let me give you a little idea of what I'm dealing with over here. Gregory's over here coming up with his secret segment that he's going to spawn on me. And the only clue I have on the break was when Gregory looks up and he goes, R-H-E-S-U-S. I said, Rhesus.
Reese's.
Why are you looking up monkey stuff over there, Gregory? What could you possibly be doing that's monkey related coming up in this last, where this is a financial show? And so now I have to worry in the back of my head, what arrow is he going to shoot at me that's monkey related? Because I got to kind of be ready for this, you know? Let me throw in one thing before we get back into the comment cards here, because I would like to...
I'll throw you a hint out.
Yes, I would love a hint.
Rhesus monkeys has to do with red wine. Now, that really confuses you, doesn't it?
Drunk monkeys. This is sounding better. I don't know where we're going with this, but it does sound very promising.
Hey, if you've got a financial question, we're talking about mutual funds, Social Security, 401k, that REIT, non-tradable REIT that you probably should avoid, or like we've had callers earlier about, I have this annuity and I can't quite figure out where my exits are. Give us a call, 504-260-0995. Email Gregory at GregoryRicks.com. Use the Gregory Ricks app to text us.
All right. We were hitting this good, hard, and heavy all week, and we would be remiss if we didn't reprise some of this for the Saturday edition. But one of the biggest financial stories we're going to be walking into this week is the next FOMC meeting. And I think they're releasing the minutes on Wednesday again. There's going to be a press conference with a bunch of gibberish jabberwocky. And
we'll translate it.
We'll attempt to translate it.
True.
But let's just, your thoughts going into this meeting. Are they going to raise rates? Should they raise rates? Will they raise rates?
I don't see why they shouldn't, based on going back to the Jackson Hole, Wyoming conference and Janet Yellen's speech afterwards and saying they're way behind the curve. And ultimately, no matter what somebody gives a percentage or the reasoning, and you're thinking they think like we do. Why would they raise rates and affect the election? They probably say, you know what, we're not affecting the election. And we do the same thing whether there's an election or not. But you're trying to get to think how they're thinking, and I'm telling you, you don't think like they do, or you would be one of the Federal Reserve members. And they basically, the discussion is they're way behind the curve. They should have had multiple rate hikes, as they've seen, and it's really tied to the quantitative easing they did for years. And $4.5 trillion on the Federal Reserve's books is equivalent to -9% on interest rates. And looking back with their data and research, they've concluded that, yeah, we shouldn't have lowered rates like we did along with the quantitative easing. So they have a lot to make up. So it shouldn't come as a shock if they raise interest rates a quarter point again next week and then do so again in December. It should not be a shock. But I would just say it's 50-50. And that's higher than what economists are, and they're saying it's probably about 25% chance. But you know, it could go either way.
I'm going,
and it isn't like the market's in a tank. You know, we've not hit into a recession. You know, when you kind of think about it from their half full look, that things are okay, market's behaving. Let's pop it.
I'm at more of a 5-10% chance that there's going to be a rate hike. And it only goes up to maybe 15-20% if we get one before the end of the year. And that's only because December exists. But something else that caught my eye in yesterday's or Thursday's Zero Hedge blog, one of our favorites, Ben Bernanke has a little portion of the Brookings Institute website. I guess it's his blog. But he made a post this week titled, "Modifying the Fed's Policy Framework. Does a higher inflation target beat negative interest rates?" And Gregory, this little blog posting, according to Zero Hedge, was just full of praise and applause for negative interest rates. And he's saying he is actually urging the use of negative interest rates when the next recession strikes.
I just think it's ugly, 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 ugly.
Well, look, you have a guy who is not.
But are they looking for that as a way to reduce the Fed's balance sheet?
I guess that wouldn't do it, right?
Well, it's taking money out of the supply.
Well, here's the rub, though. Ben Bernanke is not some fringe guy. Ben Bernanke is as mainstream as you can get. Ben Bernanke was the previous chair of the Fed. So we have someone that close to the position of power that would actually make the decision in favor of negative interest rates. Do we have any reason to believe that there's any sort of significant policy or ideological difference, chasm between Bernanke and Yellen? No. And I'm not saying this is the same as if Yellen said it herself, but it's as close as you can get. Yellen's thinking this too, Gregory.
Negative interest rates?
Yeah. They're absolutely on the table. You have Ben Bernanke urging them, calling for them. This is just as good as going for wild inflation.
I don't know. That was not my take. And that's one reason they want to get the interest rates up. They don't want to go negative. They're going to do quantitative easing, which is the equivalent of negative interest rates without actually having negative interest rates. There's so many financial effects of that. Let's use fixed interest annuities there. How do you issue a product that's where you've got to buy bonds to support it, and you're losing money on the bonds because you're in a negative interest rate world?
And it's supposed to be a fixed principal product. It's gone.
Yeah. So the reserves are going negative, yet you're having to guarantee positive numbers for the person putting money in a guaranteed principal product. So what it would do is cease all sales of those products. But then there's so many financial tools you're doing that to negatively. And I think it has global ramifications because they buy our treasuries to support their currency and prop up their country. That's, you know, you don't have gold. You have the U.S. dollar. You just can't go negative. So that's why I said if we thought like they did, I guess we would be members of the Federal Reserve.
We should. So we'd be better at it.
No. You're trying to get in there and say, but I'm going to be thinking like I'm thinking now. No, they won't let you in. There's a test they do and say, no, you got to be screwed up like us before you can be put in charge.
That's the name of the test, too. Back to the comment cards here. What would be, this is from our women's event on Wednesday. If you want to be at our next Gregory Ricks live event, it's October 12th. I know that's a ways away, but it's coming up fast. What would be the best avenue to start a college fund? See, a guy wouldn't write this. A woman, a mom wrote this. Maybe a grandmother wrote this. What would be the best avenue to start a college fund?
My opinion, the best avenue is a Roth IRA, which is for yourself, not for the child. Another avenue is if you're setting away money for that child or grandchild, put it into a savings account, not in the child's name. Okay, I like the 529, it's tax position. Here's what I'm getting at. If you're looking to do financial aid, you're going to have to, FAFSA's basically a requirement, and you're looking for financial help. You put money in a 529 plan, put money in an UGMA account, you put money in the child's name. That money's getting spent first before you get financial aid from the university. And that's why I'm not so much on board with setting aside money, children's name. James, if you're setting aside money for your children, I completely trust that you'll put that money in account and leave it alone, even though it's in your name. It doesn't have to be segregated out. And if you need to use it for some reason, it ultimately is your money and you have to do that. But you've got that money set aside. But it's not going to necessarily have that ordering that it would if it was in the child's name. That's how I look at it. Ultimately, I'd prefer to do it through a Roth.
Now, that doesn't shock me because I've heard you say this over and over throughout the years. But I remember the first time I heard that is a Roth. Why a Roth? Why a Roth?
Because you can take distributions and pay for college costs. You can be a grandparent doing it for a grandchild. You can be a grandparent and doing it for your child that has another child. So it's the purpose of putting money out to pay tuition costs, and the Roth allows that. And if it turns out all that money wasn't needed, or that child had a full ride to that university, or decided, nah, I'm not going to school anymore, I'm done, want to be whatever they want to be, then you still have your money, but you have options.
But I guess the pushback would be, well, that's not pre-tax money. That's after-tax dollars. I got to pay taxes on that, then put it in a Roth.
Gross tax-free. But you can take distributions from that account for those costs. I've seen people with 529 plans come in asking, how do I unwind this? The money wasn't used. It's going to be taxed and penalized.
All right, we're going to continue with the comment cards from Wednesday's live event. If you have a question of your own, 504-260-0995. If you need a second opinion on any other financial advice, question coming up is, my employer matches the percentage of my TSP. Should I put more in than they will match? That's next. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
She's the only one who really understands what gets me. My tractor sexy.
Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. You ever had a sexy tractor?
I've never had one that's not sexy, Gregory.
Well, I had one once. I didn't find it attractive at all. It was kind of a pain. I'll just leave it at that.
You weren't riding it right then.
Okay. Hey, this is Winning at Life. You're listening to us on iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, and that was James Parker, co-host, which has obviously always had a sexy tractor. But I've got a number for you. I threw out this to James earlier. I thought it was kind of amazing. Sources Business Week. Increase airline travel in China is projected to require 100,000 additional pilots over the next 20 years, two decades. So that's an average of 100 new pilots a week for the next 20 years. That is a leap. Now, you brought up economically, there's not going to be enough people to afford to fly around China. Need that, but darn, that guy in the rice paddy fields finds out about this. He's dropping his bucket and headed to flight school, I would think.
He doesn't get to go to flight school because when he was 14, he scored too bad on that math test, which is why he's in the rice paddy field.
But he has heart, man. He has heart.
Doesn't matter.
He'll put in the work.
No.
He wants to fly fast.
All the heart guys are actually at the Foxconn building snapping together my kid's iPhone. So the real smart guys that are connected politically, they're the ones that get to go to flight school.
Yeah, so their system's kind of messed up to achieve this.
Well, also keep in mind, how many pilots are they going to need? 100,000 or something? A million?
Yeah.
We're talking
100,000
about
next 20 years.
That's nothing.
Needing a lot of jets too.
There's one.
I'd want to be in the jet building business.
I like that line of thought right there. But there's 1.2 billion of these people. It's not going to be hard to call out 100,000 pilots out of there. Remember, there's
a bunch of them might be mistakenly in the rice fields.
There's about four times as many Chinese people as Americans. For every American, there is four people in China, and we still have a bigger economy than they do.
Well, let's see. Oh, they're communists.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, man.
Okay.
Maybe we should copy what they do more. Hey, at least they got the universal health care, though, Gregory. All right, back to the comic. Or did you want? Are we finished with that?
Oh, with the pilots thing. Yeah.
Okay. Can I get to the back to the comment card?
Yeah.
Are you going to
spring
the monkey thing on me? Because now I'm just waiting like a jack in the box over here.
No,
where all of a sudden it's going to pop up.
I have two kind of health things I'm going to throw on you after the next break.
Okay. So one of the nice ladies at Wednesday's live event, Gregory Ricks Live, filled out a comment card and she asked the question, my employer matches a percentage of my TSP. Should I put more than they will match? First, catch everyone up. What's a TSP?
It's the federal retirement plan.
That stands for thrift savings plan. Did I remember that correctly?
Okay. Yes. But that's what the federal employees have, military and such, also TSPs. You know, it goes back to another kind of rule I have, not the core three, but it's how much money should you be saving?
As much as you can.
And when should you start?
Right now.
Okay. So part of that, you need to save as much as you can. Now, if you're should I save more? Well, if you didn't save it there, will you save the excess? Being you obviously think, I can put away more. Should I? One of the things on matching, you should always save enough to get your full match. That's free money that's getting matched up. You're making a return because of the matching. Even if you're at a 1% money market account and you're just like, I can't take any swings. Pilot money. Who says you have to take risk? It is about accumulating, especially when somebody says, I'm short, I'm retiring in 4 years. And I said, we need to make up a lot of money. Well, what kind of return do I get? I said, it's not about the return. You'll get some return, but return doesn't fix this. There's no number return that's legitimate to fix this number. It's going to be what you throw into that account.
Principal.
Yeah.
Okay, so you should get more than the match if you can.
Yeah. Now, if we go spread that out a little bit, you know, I talk about the three tax whirls. Okay, that's a pre-tax savings account. And most people aren't making too much money to put money into a Roth, so you should grow money tax-free. Like we were talking a little while back about the college savings. That's a great strategy for that. And then you should save money after tax and create a step-up basis as you go. And then you, at some point in time, going to start taking income, and you're not being taxed fully on every dollar you take in income. Because remember, the pre-tax money comes out taxed as ordinary income. Have somebody come in and they've got $1.5 million in their IRA. They have they have $10,000 in savings and there's nothing else. Well, what kind of tax strategies do you have for taking money out of the IRA? There is none. It's taxed as ordinary income. So then what kind of, are you doing a side business? Are you rebuilding lawnmowers on the side, taking pallets and making backyard furniture? Maybe you can create a little business and create some tax deductions. That's what you're looking at, is what can I deduct? But there's no strategy to just show up and slash and make ordinary income taxes go away on untaxed money.
So maybe you should save that extra money, but not in the same TSP.
You need to think about the three worlds of taxes and spread your savings along that.
Man, it kind of goes in with the other question. If you do go the after-tax route and you put it in a Roth, you have a little more flexibility. You can't go use the money you put in that TSP account for grandkids' college books.
Yeah, it gives flexibility, and the magic of it is giving it time so it generates income that does not show up on the 1040. There's not a place. What were your Roth distributions this year? There's no such line on the 1040.
Okay. If someone else has this question in the future, where can they go to get that answer? Who else can they ask besides a fiduciary? If my employer matches a percentage of my TSP, should I put more in than they will match? Because I know if you go to a broker guy, they'll say, I know what you can do with that extra money. Depends on what they're selling. If it's a mutual fund guy, put it in a mutual fund. If it's an annuity guy, put it in an annuity. But
yeah, and ultimately, here's what comes down to it. If it's the best thing, and you know, and they tell me, you know, if they send it to me, my check, I'm going to spend it. You know, I'm not going to save it. Then by darn sure, put it in that pre-tax account as much as you can.
Next card. How would I invest $900,000 and be able to draw an income per year without touching my principal amount? Now, this doesn't sound very hypothetical when they come up with $900,000. You know, this isn't a million, this isn't $100,000.
It's kind of specific.
But this
$900,000.
You know, we had a similar question earlier. If I had $100,000, what would you do? That hypothetical in the first hour?
Throwing in there helps you and preserve my principal. I would say they're risk tolerant. They're not going to be a 2 on that. Oh, yeah, I don't mind my principal going down 6%. They could be a 3 or 4, meaning, you know, maybe they've got a little bit of tolerance to 0. So we would factor that as probably being really conservative. So then you're looking at what type of yield are they in over the next 10 years? Probably a 3 to 5, call it 4. And then think of it, maybe we'll take income stream of 3%. From the assets, or if they're just, I'm not worried about growing the assets, but I don't want it to go down. So maybe you can get close to 4 on distributions on $900,000. So what are we talking about? Probably about $35,000 a year from assets.
So would you divvy up in different baskets? The guy listening probably wasn't listening in the first hour, but we threw out just a hypothetical $100,000. Some of it would go into the ETFs, the bond-like stuff. Some of it would go into a fixed annuity of some sort.
Yeah, you might get some in the growth and income. You would probably have more in a treasury short duration bond type strategy as well.
ETFs?
Yeah, ETFs. And then you're probably using some fixed guaranteed tools such as fixed interest or fixed indexed annuities into the mix, because we're going to treat those as bond-like. And there might be a look at specific bonds, but our concern is rising interest rate environment. When they keep going to that principal part of the question they wrote down, is I want to protect my principal. So decisions have to be made along those lines. So what are we trying to, let's try to get them about 4 so they can take that money on average and kick out the income.
And you have a little more flexibility in dealing with the surrender periods, too, because you can put some in a basket to set up this other money that's not going to get turned on for 10 years, which...
Yeah, and could be a matter of laddering some strategies as well and financial tools to get there that overall keeps it in place.
All right. You know, sometimes we get these comment cards, and they're not necessarily questions, just sort of thoughts. What's your primary concern? Maintain income stream and max investments. That's all, Gregory. A lot of talk about income streams from the women cards. Any reason women are saying the words income stream more often than the guys?
Because they're wanting that security of making sure they don't run out of monthly checks.
It's a security issue.
The male is more the gatherer, and she wants to make sure that everything he's bringing in continues to look out for the family.
He's saying, how can I score big now?
And she says, how do I make it last?
All right. 504-260-0995. If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
This is Winning It Life, the weekly wrap, and we have your financial fix. We maybe can give you a Walter White high with your money.
That's not a good slogan. We can't stick with that one. That one's going to be left on the cutting floor.
Does everybody know what Walter White high is?
Yeah.
See,
no, Lisa Vaca, you don't know what that means?
Most don't. We wouldn't use it anyhow, but since we're playing that song, because actually my idea of the financial fix...
Is methamphetamines?
No, came from that song. He just wants to be his girlfriend's fix. If you need something, I'm it for you. And that's what that song's about. So he's just kind of relating. Anything you need, I'm your fix. Look for me. I'll take care of you. We are that source for a financial fix. You need information. You need help. You have a question. You can get your fix here and make it a better day for you tomorrow.
Hey, y'all in the producer booth, y'all know who Walter White is? That was Bryan Cranston's character on Breaking Bad, the pop culture's most notorious meth cook. So we have a meth reference so far, but it's kind of interesting because
it's been a while since that. Everybody didn't watch it, and it's just not a common thing, except it's what do we call that?
The pop culture reference?
Yes, it's a pop culture reference.
Okay, but what's the spinoff of Breaking Bad?
Better Call Saul.
Where how else is that tied into our show?
Better Call Gregory.
Mm-hmm.
Pop culture mm-hmm. connections.
Mm-hmm.
Or using a word from a song. No,
people are going to find out about our meth cooking hobby on the side. This is what do you think we do on Sundays? We do the show 6 days a week. We got to do something on Sunday. We got a little Winnebago. We drive out to Bogalusa.
Hey, back to non-pop culture. Let's see. Fed action. When the Fed raised short-term interest rates on December 16th of 2015, their post-meeting press conference included a forecast of 4 rate hikes this year.
Laughable now, isn't it?
Yeah. That would result in a 1 percentage point increase. 4 hikes spread over 8 scheduled meetings of a quarter of 1% point on each. Through the first 5 meetings of 2016, the Fed has done what?
Zero.
Zero interest rates. Meeting number 6 of 2016 will take place this coming week. So they're running out of opportunities to get to 1%.
Man, I hope they pop it, though. That's going to be so fun to see how all this shakes out, because we're in a learning frontier here of economics. We have not seen what happens when we're in this situation.
Let's go with one more.
Sure.
This week's Fed meeting is the 21st of the Janet Yellen era. Yellen became the Fed chair on February 3rd of 2014. There have been 13 dissents to her interest rate recommendations from her first 20 meetings cast by 5 different members of the Federal Open Market Committee. So when we talk about the FOMC, it is the Federal Open Market Committee. They're not all on the same page, are they?
Yeah, part of me thinks that could be orchestrated. you know, someone dissent on this so they don't think we're unanimous, because if they're unanimous in keeping them low, then that sounds scared and, you know.
I know, and you've heard my take on some of those that they float out. They're like they just, these open market committee members just go out, oh, well, yeah, I'm going on TV and we'll talk. You think they don't run it by Janet? Yeah, I don't think they just go out there and fly by the seat of their pants.
All right, let's get back to one of the comment cards from this Wednesday's.
Let's ask this one. If you were in charge of the Fed, would y'all say, yeah, whatever y'all want, it was cool with me?
No. Everything would be carefully scripted, because one wrong word could send the markets into a tizzy in either direction.
Yeah.
It's just very damaging, the wrong word.
Dangerous, yeah.
Too much power invested in these unelected goobers here. All right, back to the comment cards. What's your primary concern? Working into old age because I can't afford to retire. Now, Gregory, this is not a problem you and I face, because we have one of these jobs. Number one, requires no physical dexterity. You can cut off my legs and one of my arms, and I can still do my job just fine. So I don't have to worry about age really interfering with my ability to do my job.
Mental ability, as long as your mind stays good.
Well, it's not. I wouldn't even say mental ability, because there are people whose job isn't requiring so much physical dexterity as it is mental dexterity. So everyone can understand why you can't lay bricks well into your 70s, or be a roofer, or do any, or be a roustabout on an oil rig until when you're 75. But even things like a nurse, you know, having to be around all that stress and, you know, the responsibility that
it's,
if you make a mistake,
it's pretty physical as well what nurses do.
Sure, but I'm thinking it's got to be tougher on a mental level. You know, you see people die on a regular basis. If you make a mistake, there's lives hanging in the balance. You got a doctor yelling at you, you got an orderly screwing up, you're working these long shifts and funky hours, and then, you know, the rest of your life is pulling you in other directions. That's got to be, even if you can physically do it, just dragging out such a difficult job like that, or like an EMS worker. Can you imagine picking up, you know,
auto accidents? Well, I can't imagine being 68 and still doing that.
I know. So
or any of those that you.
But if that's your chosen profession, what's your options? You could be the best EMT worker in the world, but you can't go keep scraping people off the pavement well into your 70s.
No, maybe you need transition into teaching the younger ones, or being a manager. Such as that. And some of that evolves at that. But, you know, are you going to be a bricklayer manager?
Yeah, a contractor of some sort, maybe. But that's a
figure out how to get on the ownership contractor side, not doing the actual work. But we're all living longer, you know, and people ask me all the time. A gentleman came on board as a client yesterday. That's one of the things he said. He said, I need to know your timeline. And he says, I know you're not going to work this hard forever. And I agreed. I said, no, I'm going to start taking some Fridays off in the future. Not every Friday, but probably one a month. You know, I'm going to dial it back. But I said, there's nothing in my vision do I see selling my company or stepping completely away from it. Why? I'm in good health, and I'm going to go as long as I have good health and mind. So why would I quit doing what I'm doing this that I love to do? So we're going to be around for a while. I'm 55. I say easy, another 15 to 20 years, unless health happens, and that we can't predict. But otherwise, we'll be around, and all these great people I have working for me are going to be so sharp by that period of time that we don't have to worry about the future of the company and taking care of clients. But that's the thinking. And you know what I've seen more of a change of? I see meetings on a regular basis. What's your retirement date? I don't have one. I plan to work until they say I can't anymore. And that you're starting to see that change. So we do have some that, because it's more physical, I have these conversations. I'm just tired. I can't do it anymore. Had a guy come in this Thursday. He's got some health issues, and he's just kind of tired. He says, I just don't know that I can do it going forward, but I'm in great position to retire, so I'm thinking about enjoying retirement. And yeah, he's great position. And we had the discussion once again, wife's worried about the income, and we've talked about that. And she said, and because as we were wrapping up, she said, well, I do have a question. And she started asking about income. How do we make sure we can generate enough income? Because he makes a bunch of money, great lifestyle. And I said, well, it goes back to what we're going to talk about in the next meeting, is the income plan from the pension, the 401k, the lump sum that's out there also, the accumulated assets that you have. But I said one of the key things you have to do is at least go look at your last 6 months of spending, your inflow and outflow from your checking account that you handle all the bills through. And if you need to go further, go back to 12 months. That's our basis, so you can get a real look at what you're spending, what you're doing, and see what you need to tweak and how that matches up with what the assets and pension and Social Security can generate.
Yeah, and on a concern like this, I think it could be just as important to focus on not necessarily the inflow, but the outflow. You know, people worried about income in retirement. How much money are you spending? Maybe you need to downsize a little bit. Maybe you need to get into a retirement home that has less overhead, or maybe a reverse mortgage so one of the bills goes away. Or maybe before you do retire, you got to pay off all those credit cards. So, you know, your outflows could be just as important.
I told her, I said, we don't miss this either. This isn't like you're retiring and we found we were way off. I said, we're going to get this pretty tight when it's that time in a couple months.
All right, we got one segment left. So if you have a financial situation, a question, you want a second opinion on an annuity you picked up, 504-260-0995. That's right. You better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Yeah, we're on two of our three affiliates on the Saturday edition of the show. Hey, if you can't get us, if for some reason there's a Pelicans game, because Pelicans are coming up, or our Biloxi folks over there, if there's some high school football that's interrupting us, don't forget the iHeartRadio stream. We are broadcasted on that. When the air feed's interrupted, we are still on the digital side. You can find us. For those of you who happen to be in New Orleans, but you're a Baton Rouge native, when you're listening to us on WJBO during the week on JBO, that's cool, but you turn on Saturday, hey, where are they at? Find us on the iHeartRadio app. You got to go to WRNO for that one. But we're here. We're still doing the show. And
we're streaming in all three of the markets. They should be able to pull it from there.
Not on Saturday. On Saturday, we are not streaming on News Radio 1150 WJBO.
Yeah, they go to RNO.
All right. To the phones we go. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. Hey, Jerry in New Orleans, you're next up on Winning It Life. How can we help you?
Yes, I was curious on an annuity, a life rider. Who is that beneficial for? I mean, looking at the annuities and they're talking about a life rider, a benefit rider.
It is benefit for the annuitant. Now, typically, and I wouldn't take an annuity with an income rider if it did not have spousal continuation option. So it's going to benefit both if you have a spouse, because you can select spousal continuation, probably a slight reduction in the percentage, maybe a half point for adding spousal continuation on, but it is designed for the annuitant at the core.
Is it beneficial for someone like has marginal assets, or is it beneficial for someone who has a substantial assets?
It's kind of, look at it this way. What is it beneficial for? It's beneficial for creating income that never stops as long as you live. And look at it as a pension-like income, because it's going to kick out that check every month from now on. You don't lose control of underlying assets. It is not annuitization. You can turn on the income typically, and you can turn off the income, but it's about insurance. Insurance, if you live too long, is what you're really paying for. Or look at it as longevity insurance. We don't know how long we're going to go. We don't know if the assets will hold up, but the checks will keep coming. How does that help you?
I think that kind of answers the question.
Okay.
Look at it more as a life insurance policy than income life.
Well, life insurance is for if you're dying too soon. Annuities, fixed annuities, are if you live too long. And for that, an income rider enhances that, because it gives you, a 6% compounding increase through deferral. And then once you turn it on, you're turning on an income that's based on a higher number than if you were getting current interest rates. So it's an enhancement to making sure the checks never run out.
It's like a bizarro life insurance. You know Bizarro Superman?
Yeah.
He's the opposite Superman, wears opposite colors, and he's evil. This is bizarro life insurance. Does that help? That doesn't help. I just ruined all your
good
advice.
If you need some more help with that, give us a call, but that's what it is.
Thank you, Jerry. We're going to stick with the phones. Art in St. Rose, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Art?
Yeah, Greg, I have a question about the...
Oh, this is the Art.
Yes.
Hey, Art.
Traits.
Welcome to the show today.
Good evening. I mean, good morning.
afternoon, so, Art. Afternoon.
Yes, it is afternoon. What I can't understand is that the Fed target rate is 25 to 50 basis points. Since December, the most they've ever paid is 28 basis points, and for the last month they've only paid 25 basis points to the banks. So if they raise the rates to, like you said, they raise the target from a half to 75, if they've never paid more than 28, why, and there's no demand to pay more than 25 to 28, why would they even raise it to 50 as a bottom?
Because, well, it forces
the
50 basis points to be paid is really what it's doing. It's forcing that to happen.
It's forcing what to happen?
That it would be 50 basis points to 75. So whether or not they're wanting to pay it, it forces to be paid more for fund rates. The reason it's reduced, if they were at 3, then if they were, say, at 3 to 3.25, well, they're paying 3. And why would they want to pay more? It's a quarter to a half. But what you're forcing is that level to move up, and so it all gets kind of passed along through the system.
Well, I don't understand how capitalists are placing all of this. I mean, if there was a demand, you would think that the money would automatically, they would have to pay more. In other words, it would go up besides the most it's ever gone up was to 28. Why would it not go to 45? And then when it got to 45... The market would say, oh, we do need to put the bottom at 50.
Yeah, but you know what? For the banks, it's cheap money. But what you've seen is when you go look at 10-year treasuries, before they raised it to a quarter to a half, we had treasuries close to 2%.
Right.
And then since, we've seen them drop down to 1.5. Now they've inched back up. Why the threat of possible increase here? There is more worry about this meeting. It's not an absolute that they're not going to raise it. So we've seen treasuries move back up. So you can also, and then mortgage rates, like, oh my gosh, it's going to cause mortgage rates to go up. Mortgage rates have been lower since they've raised a quarter point. So it does not necessarily affect the system. The system is still kind of dictating, even though the feds know they have to get at a minimum and get things up. We're in a crazy interest rate world, especially with everything else being negative. No easy explanation.
The Fed funds rate affects immediately is the prime rate, and credit cards are based off the prime rate. And then if you want to borrow money, the bank says, well, instead of charging you 3.5, I'm going to charge you 3.75. And you tell the bank, well, I'm not paying you 3.75. I'm only going to pay you 3. Well, we want to lend money, so we'll go ahead and accept the 3. But then if you got a credit card, the credit card automatically, your rate goes up. So if you're carrying a balance, which I guess 70% of the public or 80% of the public does.
Yeah, and it's probably...
In other words, they're just stealing money from people.
It's probably going to affect the LIBOR rate. There's a fixed interest annuity that we use that kind of is 2 plus the LIBOR rate. And now they've come back. LIBOR's moved up. So they've come back and said, we're not going to use a 2 base plus LIBOR. We're going to use a 0.75 plus LIBOR.
So they're still using the LIBOR rate?
Fixed interest annuity, which is pretty cool when you consider it 2 plus the LIBOR and you're at 2.68. Where else do you go get that for a short period of time?
I've seen with all the scandals on the LIBOR rate over the years, you know, I would think that...
Yeah, well...
It's not a real scandal.
Run away with your hair on fire, like you would say.
The banks were doing little deals and controlling that, but they got spanked real bad. I can't say they won't ever do it again. We're seeing this Wells Fargo and all this stuff, and there's probably other banks been doing high pressure on their salespeople to do things that they shouldn't. More is going to come from that.
Good to hear from you, Art. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. My take on the LIBOR scandal is it's not a scandal at all. They were playing by the rules that they were given by the powers that be.
Yeah. So you can kind of do a handshake. Hey, help me out on this rate to move this money today.
Yeah. Hey, Gregory, I'm going to put you in charge of my corner store over here. How much should your favorite soda cost? Yeah, right. You'd say a nickel, Parker. That's what it should be. Sounds good to me. Let's make it a nickel. Hey, Patrick in Boutique, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Good afternoon.
It is afternoon. You got it right. Better than art.
Yes. Years ago, corporations used to be able to expense in full the year of acquisition what was normally long-term assets. Is that $20,000 number still the going amount, or has that increased over the years?
I think that has increased, but gosh, that'd have been a better question for Jude. He probably could have answered it off the top of his head. I would, if we weren't at the end of the show, I'd be Googling it to get you to verify the answer on that.
Yeah, I'm talking about 20 years ago. It seems like it was about $20,000, what was normally depreciable assets, something that.
Yeah, it's a bigger number now.
Lasting longer than 1 year, you could depreciate it. I mean, you could expense it all in year of acquisition to save on tax on tax bill.
Right.
But I was just wondering what that number was now.
No, I mean, your instinct's right. It's gone up, but we don't know what it is off the top of
I'd
our head.
I'd have to look it up to tell you that, because I wouldn't want to give a wrong number.
Sorry, Patrick. We wanted to seem so smart there. We got 1 minute. What's
That's
up with the rhesus
the
monkey?
Truth.
Why?
That's the truth.
What are you springing with the rhesus monkey on me?
Rhesus monkey. Red wine combats muscle fatigue. Researchers, Georgetown University, found that a component found in red wine, resveratrol, can improve muscle function. When the rhesus monkeys had been fed high-fat, high-sugar diets were given resveratrol, their muscles became more resistant to fatigue compared to monkeys that ate the same diet without it. So how does this help? Humans, especially elderly, could improve physical activity, mobility, and stability with a glass of red wine.
That is ridiculous.
I don't.
You know, one time I had a couple bottles of glasses of wine, and my muscles were messed up.
Turn this mic off.
I had no dexterity after that. Alcohol ruins your dexterity, Gregory.
You drink too much.
You're home away from the show, GregoryRicks.com and the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. I'm James Parker. This has been Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
With Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without express consent by Gregory Ricks is prohibited.
He's just connecting to the show. Started watching us, listening.